coming in?" said Stash, nodding toward a finger of hissing surf, just now touching Slank's ankles. "I like the idea of them having to think about it a while, and if the sea don't get 'em, there's that big old croc somewheres about, and them savages."
He smiled unpleasantly down at Slank, savouring his triumph for another moment, then turned to his men and barked,
"Put the chunk in the longboat."
The men hesitated.
"Well?"
said Stash.
"Begging your pardon, Captain,"
said Smee.
"But some of us are thinking this here boat is bewitched, because of how it was flying and all. One of the men seen the dory just down the beach there. It's swamped, and there's a piece torn from the chanson, but the oars are still in the oarlocks, and it'll float."
"The door is too small," said Stash.
"True, this boat was flying, but that just shows you the power of the treasure we're taking home. We'll live as kings, men. Kings! Now let's get our treasure back to the ship and get off this cursed island."
The pirates, persuaded, hoisted the trunk into the longboat and hauled the boat back into the water. As they shoved off, Slash cast a glance back at Little Richard and Slank, lying bound in the sand. Slank again met his eyes, but this time, instead of looking angry, he almost looked bemused.
"Why would that be?"
Stash wondered.
"Tide'll be in soon,"
Stash shouted.
"Remember to hold your breath."
The pirates laughed, and Little Richard whimpered, but Slank remained annoyingly calm.
"I'll be fine, Mr. Stash," he called back, "but I hope you can swim."
"It'll be you doing the swimming, sir, not I,"
Black Stash answered. The pirates laughed again, dutifully. But Stash was strangely troubled as the longboat, with his men at the oars, surged away from the beach where Slank lay, still regarding him with that infuriating smirk.
"As if he knows something," thought Stash.
"But what could he know?"
After pondering this a moment more, Stash dismissed the two men on the beach and turned his attention forward in the direction of the Jolly Roger, an escape from this island. He did not see the four fast-moving V's on the surface of the silver water, heading straight for the longboat. Little Richard, straining mightily against his bonds, grunted, swore, grunted again, but despite his massive strength, he could not break the stout rope, nor unravel the knots tied with sailor's skill. Feeling the water lapping at his feet, he whimpered and tried to roll up the beach. Slank was rolling too, but sideways. His eyes were on a spot in the sand next to the indentation left by the trunk, a glowing spot where the puff of golden powder had fallen when he'd been banging off the hinges with a rock. He rolled over, and then again, until he was on his stomach, the glowing spot to his right and a little below him on the beach. He carefully positioned his body, then rolled toward the spot, onto his back and... He immediately felt the pleasing warmth surge through him, felt his body starting to become light. But he didn't want to fly. Focusing, concentrating, he had some practice with this, he directed the brief flash of power into his arms. With all his strength, he pulled. He felt the rope give, then suddenly part. He was free. He sat up and quickly untied the ropes to his feet.
"Sir,"
said Little Richard, not believing his eyes.
"How did you do that?"
"Never mind that now,"
said Slank, scanning the sand until he found his dagger.
"Turn over so I can cut you loose. We need to stay in sight of that longboat."
The mermaids, having had some experience, now knew exactly how to attack the longboat. They struck the side in perfect unison, very nearly capsizing it and throwing two of Stash's men straight overboard. Stash could not imagine what massive thing had hit them.
"A whale? In the lagoon?"
Smee was on his feet, shouting,
"Captain, men overboard!"
"I know, you idiot!"
shouted Stash.
"Sit down!"
Too late. Smee had further destabilized the boat, which rocked violently, and sent the little man staggering to the side. He lost his balance, and, grabbing desperately for something to hold onto, he latched onto the trunk's end handle, pulling the trunk with him as he spilled into the water.
"No!"
bellowed Stash, lunging to grab the trunk, but as he touched it, it was swatted away from him toward shore by a tail, a long green tail.
"What kind of whale is that?"
At that instant, the boat was struck again. This time it went over easily, completely upside down. Stash and the rest of the men flew into the water, gasping, sputtering, and thrashing their way desperately back to the capsized boat. Stash grabbed it, then lifted his head as far as he could, looking around frantically for the trunk.
No!
He bellowed as he finally saw it drifting back toward the shore. Slank and Little Richard ran along the beach in the direction of the commotion out on the water. The bellowing and shouting of the pirates meant that the mermaids, as Slank had hoped, were attacking the pirates, for once doing Slank a favor. He smiled as he heard Stash's anguished yell that told him that the trunk was in the water again.
"There it is!"
shouted Little Richard, pointing. Slank saw the trunk bobbing in shallow water not far from another shape, dark and rounded, the dory. If the pirates were right, it would still float. Slank smiled. There might be a way off the island, even without the longboat. 50 yards out on the moonlit lagoon, he could just make out the low, dark shape of the longboat with the pirates clinging to it. Stash and his men had the misfortune of getting caught in the current and were now drifting toward the mouth of the lagoon, their efforts to swim the longboat to shore going poorly.
"Fare thee well, Captain Stash,"
Slank called out.
"That's mine," cried Stash.
"Not any more, it ain't,"
laughed Slank. He turned his attention to the trunk just offshore now. Still wary of mermaids, Slank was reluctant to venture into the water. To Little Richard, he said,
"Pull it up onto dry land. I'll find me another rock."
Molly saw it all from under the palms, saw the pirates in trouble, saw Slank gloating in triumph, saw the trunk. Molly knew this was the moment. Either she was a star catcher or she wasn't, and if she was, this was when she proved it, with or without Peter.
"I have to go out there," she said.
"I ain't going out there,"
muttered Tubby Ted.
"I can't let that man have the trunk," said Molly. "I have to stop him."
"How?"
said James.
"I don't know," said Molly, looking around, "but I have to."
She found a coconut on the sand, picked it up, hefted it.
"You're going after pirates with a coconut," said Tubby Ted. "You're daft, you are."
"Nevertheless," said Molly, "I'm going."
"So am I,"
said James, picking up a coconut of his own.
"So am I, miss," said Alf. "I'll take that big one there."
"If he gets deep enough in the water, you may get some help from Arm," said Molly. "James and I will take Mr. Slank."
The three of them started down the beach.
"Daft,"
said Tubby Ted.
"Hurry!"
Slank yelled to Little Richard, who, still worried about mermaids, was wading cautiously toward the bobbing trunk. Just as he reached it, Arm hit him. No man had ever knocked Little Richard down. But of course Arm was not a man. Arm was a sleek, hurtling missile, 567.5 pounds of ocean-hardened muscle, hurtling through the air and nailing the giant square in the chest with the force that would have killed some men. In Little Richard's case, it was enough to knock the breath from his body and send him flailing backward into the shallow water. He got back to his feet only to feel another massive weight on him. This time it was Alf, who locked his thick arms around the giant's throat, hanging on for dear life as Little Richard, weakened and breath-starved, staggered forward and went down again. Slank heard the struggle and strode toward the water. He was expecting mermaids, and thus didn't see the two small shapes racing up from behind and leaping onto his back. He felt the impact, then something pulling at his ears, nearly tearing them off and scratching at his eyes, while at the same time something else was sinking its teeth into his legs.
"How many are there?"
Slank screamed and jabbed back with his elbows, sending his assailants flying. He whirled and saw...
"Children?"
Two of them, the girl from the ship, and a small boy.
Slank almost laughed.
"Children."
But then he stumbled as the girl,
"She's very quick,"
hooked her leg around his. He fell face down, and instantly something hard struck his head, again and again. He went dizzy, but managed to writhe sideways to see.
"Coconuts! Children are beating me senseless with coconuts!"
Blood streaming down his face, Slank lunged to his feet, flailing his arms as he staggered toward the lagoon, the children still clinging to his back and bashing him with coconuts. As blackness closed in, Slank groped desperately for the knife in his belt. Alf was a very strong man, but Little Richard was inhuman.
Despite his initial advantage, Alf realized that Little Richard was slowly gaining the upper hand, peeling Alf's hands away from his neck and dragging them both back to the beach where the giant would be able to breathe freely, and Alf would be no match for his monstrous strength.
"Hold on!" Molly shouted to James. "We've got him!"
She bashed the coconut hard again onto Slank's skull. Slank shuddered but did not go down. Suddenly the man's right hand swept down toward James.
"Knife!"
James screamed, letting go of Slank to dodge the blade. Now only Molly was holding on. Slank reared back, and against the twinkling black of the night sky, Molly saw a silver swipe of metal as Slank brought the knife toward her, like a man trying to scratch his back. The blade was aimed straight for Molly's face. She lifted the coconut and blocked the blow. The knife lodged in the coconut, and Slank yanked it free, at the same time pulling the coconut from Molly's grasp. Molly grabbed Slank's right arm and tugged hard. He screamed in pain and fury. She pulled again, harder. Again the knife flashed toward Molly's face. She let go, falling back into the water. Slank towered over her, the knife held high, his eyes wild with pain and anger. He raised his knife hand to stab her.
"Ah!"
he bellowed, as Arm delivered a spine-racking blow to his back. Slank turned and slashed at the porpoise, only to receive a face full of water blasted from Arm's blowhole. As Slank gasped and sputtered, Arm rose to his tail, reared back, and snapped forward, striking the sailor hard. Slank spun a half-circle and splashed down into the water. Molly got her legs under her. From behind, she heard Arm chittering and chirping urgently. She didn't get all of it, but the essential message was clear. Go! Molly grabbed James by the arm, dragging him toward the beach, where she figured she and James could outrun the men. 2 steps from the beach, Slank tackled them both. Molly went down, Slank grabbing her by the leg. Behind them, the frantic chittering grew louder, but the water here was too shallow for Arm to help. Molly, her face covered with sticky sand, felt Slank drag her and James roughly onto the beach. Her heart sank as she saw Tubby, Prentice, Thomas, and Alf all lying face down in the sand, Little Richard standing over them.
"Where's the trunk?" shouted Slank.
"Right there,"
said Little Richard, pointing a few yards down the beach to where the trunk lay at the water's edge, its rough sides lapped by gentle wavelets. Satisfied that it was out of reach of porpoises or mermaids, he left it for a moment, turned, and threw Molly and James roughly to the sand next to Alf and the other children.
"You all right, Mr. Slank?" said Little Richard.
"No,"
said Slank, touching his bleeding scalp.
"I'm not all right."
"What'll we do with them?"
said Little Richard, gesturing to the figures on the sand.
"We kill them," said Slank quietly.
"I've learnt my lesson about leaving people alive. We'll start with the brave young lady."
Knife in his right hand, Slank grabbed Molly's hair with his left and yanked her to a sitting position. She grunted in pain, but refused to cry out. Slank knelt in front of her, his face close to hers, staring into her eyes.
"You wanted that trunk very badly, didn't you?" Molly asked her, he said.
Molly only glared in response.
"Wanted to save it for your daddy, didn't you?" continued Slank. "The great Leonard Astor, the great star catcher. Only he wasn't so great, was he? Got on the wrong ship, he did. We fooled him good, the great Leonard Astor."
With that, Slank reached inside his shirt and slowly pulled out the golden locket. Molly's eyes fell on it and widened.
"You," she said, you're... "Yes," Slank said, "I'm one of them. That's why we put the trunk on the Neverland, so I could keep an eye on it while your fool father chased a trunk full of sand onto the Wasp. I grant you, we didn't count on you being aboard the Neverland, and we surely didn't expect that idiot pirate to come blundering into this business. But it's all cleared up nicely now, isn't it, Molly? And soon the trunk will be in the hands of King Zarboff."
Molly flinched at the name.
"That's right, Molly," said Slank, delighted at the reaction. "At long last, we will have the power. You have no idea how much power, Molly. It will change everything. If only you would live to see it."
Slank shifted forward and brought his knife blade to Molly's neck. She refused to pull back, refused to whimper, staring stonily into Slank's eyes as he began to press the sharp blade against her throat.
Ahoy!
Slank jerked back, his knife leaving a thin line of blood on Molly's neck. Both of them turned toward the source of the shout, a flat rock 25 yards offshore, its occupant clearly visible in the bright moonlight.
Peter!
Shouted Molly. Slank spat out a curse. It was impossible. He'd killed this boy himself, but there he stood, water dripping from his hair, his arms crossed in defiance, surrounded by mermaids, as if they were guarding him. He had one foot on the rock, the other rested firmly on the trunk. Chapter 68, The Bargain. For a moment they just stared at each other across the silver stretch of lagoon, Slank and Peter, the man and the boy. It was Slank who broke the silence.
"Do you see this, boy?"
he said, holding up his knife, twisting it so the blade glinted in the moonlight.
"I see it,"
answered Peter with a shout.
"Good," said Slank. "Now understand this. If you don't do exactly as I say, this knife will be covered with the blood of your friends here, starting with the young lady."
Grabbing a handful of Molly's hair, Slank jerked her to her feet. She cried out in pain.
"Molly!"
shouted Peter.
"Are you all right?"
"Don't listen to him, Peter!"
she shouted.
"Don't let him... Oh!"
Slank had silenced her with another yank on her hair.
"You understand the situation, boy?"
Slank shouted.
"I do,"
answered Peter.
"Good,"
said Slank.
"Then we can do business."
"Peter, no!"
shouted Molly. Slank jerked her head again and again she cried in pain.
"You keep quiet,"
Slank hissed at her.
"Oh, I'll cut your throat just for the satisfaction."
He called out to Peter.
"I'm curious, boy. How did you get the trunk?"
"I took it when you were talking about killing them," said Peter.
"Clever boy," said Slank. "But how did you get it out there on the rock so quick?"
"My friends helped me," Peter answered, gesturing at the mermaids.
"I see,"
said Slank.
"So the devil fish are on your side now?"
"They are," said Peter. And, strangely enough, it was true. Peter still didn't quite understand it. All he knew was that, head throbbing in pain, he'd awakened in the water, in the embrace of the mermaid he'd saved. And somehow the mermaid was talking to him, except that her mouth wasn't moving and her words were only sort of words, because they were also pictures and feelings. Peter found that somehow he understood the mermaid, she called herself teacher, effortlessly, and somehow she understood him, and the importance of protecting the trunk, she called it creator, from the bad men. When they heard the struggle on the beach and saw the trunk unguarded, a plan of action formed instantly in both of their minds at once, as if they were thinking with one brain. Slank shouted,
"If them devilfish will do as you say, I think we can work ourselves a mutual bargain, boy. I'll trade the life of this girl, the lives of all your friends here, for that trunk."
Molly started to shout something, but Slank clapped his hand over her mouth. The lagoon was silent, except for the low hiss of the gentle surf and the rumble of the distant waterfall.
"All right,"
said Peter.
"No!"
shouted Molly, yanking her mouth free.
"Shut up,"
said Slank, covering her mouth again. To Peter he said,
"I knew you was a bright boy, a reasonable boy, so you'll understand that I have to add a condition to the bargain."
"What condition?" asked Peter.
"I need safe passage in that dory, back out to the ship,"
said Slank.
"You need to tell them devilfish to leave me alone."
Peter looked down and exchanged a look with Teacher, who was in the water just in front of the rock where he stood. Then he looked back at Slank.
"They'll leave you alone,"
said Peter.
"I appreciate your assurance on that,"
said Slank.
"I'm sure you're an honest boy, but just the same, I need me a little protection."
"What do you mean?" said Peter.
"I mean the girl goes with me,"
said Slank.
"Your other friends can stay, but she goes with me, in the dory, with the trunk. Once I get to the ship, I'll leave her in the dory, and your fish friends can swim her back." "Peter, don't do it!"
It was Alf, yelling now.
Once he's got the trunk on his ship, he won't have no reason to let her go.
That's right, Peter,
shouted James, sitting up. Don't do it.
Shut them two up,
barked Slank. Little Richard shoved the two protesters back to the sand with his huge right boot. Slank shouted to Peter,
What do you say, boy? Do we have ourselves a bargain?
How do I know you'll let her go? Said Peter.
Because I'm giving you my word, said Slank. And if you don't agree to my bargain, I give you my word I'll start cutting throats here, and you'll see that my word is good. So, what do you say?
Now the silence was total. Even the sounds of surf and water went momentarily quiet, as if the lagoon itself awaited Peter's answer.
All right, then, said Peter. I accept your bargain.
Molly tried to shout something, but Slank, anticipating her reaction, kept his hand clamped hard on her mouth.
There's a good boy, he said. You just saved your friends' lives. Now, here's what you do. You have two of those devil fish swim that trunk to shore and shove it ashore right by that dory there. Just two, no more. Then I want them to swim back with their heads high, where I can see them. I want to see all of them creatures' heads when we row out of here. And I want you to stay on that rock till we're gone. You understand all that, boy?
Yes, said Peter.
That's good, said Slank, because I'll have my knife to this young lady's neck. And there's no human nor fish can move fast enough to keep me from cutting her. You understand, boy?
I understand.
Good, said Slank. Now, send them devil fish over with the trunk.
Peter crouched on the rock, exchanging a look with Teacher, who turned to the other mermaids and emitted a long and complex series of guttural sounds. Two of the mermaids, both auburn-haired, swam to the rock. Peter slid the trunk into the water where it bobbed cork-like on the surface. The auburn-haired mermaids got behind it and began propelling it swiftly toward the beach dory.
"That's a fine lad," said Slank, watching the trunk's approach. "A fine lad indeed."
Peter didn't answer. He stood statue still on the rock, his eyes trained on Molly. She too seemed to be looking at him, but even given the bright moonlight, was too far away for him to see her face clearly. It was probably just as well, because the look in her eyes as the trunk came closer and closer to shore was one of cold fury. But Slank saw the girl's look and understood it. It gave him great pleasure.
"The boy likes you very much,"
he whispered harshly to Molly, keeping his hand firmly clamped over her mouth.
"But he's not very savvy, is he?"
Then he laughed as Molly struggled, uselessly, to reply. Chapter 69 Reprieve
"Paddle, you dogs!"
shouted Stash.
"Paddle and kick! We're making headway!"
The exhausted pirates groaned, but complied, for they could see that Stash was right. The capsized longboat, with agonizing slowness, was curving toward the far leftmost of the two points of land that framed the lagoon. As veteran seamen, they all understood the urgency of the situation. If they could not push the longboat over the point in time, the current would sweep them past it and out to sea. So paddle and kick they did, at Stash's urging. So desperate was the situation that even Stash, tucking his sword into his belt, paddled and kicked. It was unheard of, the great pirate himself reduced to this. They were nearly even with the end of the point now. It loomed in the moonlight 50 yards away. Too far. None of them could swim that distance. Most of them, typically for pirates, could not swim at all.
"Captain!"
cried Smee.
"We ain't gonna make it!"
"Paddle and kick!"
roared Stash in response. But he too saw that it was hopeless. They were clearly past the point now. He considered his options. If he could right the capsized longboat and bail it, he might have a chance to survive. But there were 10 men clinging to the overturned hull, too many to get the boat floating again. He'd have to get rid of some.
"You men on this side," he shouted, "let go."
The pirates closest to Stash, there were 5 of them, stared back at him, too stunned to answer.
"I said let go,"
shouted Stash, awkwardly drawing his sword. But, Captain, protested the man next to him,
if we... Let go!
Roared Stash, making his point by clubbing the man's hand with the hilt of his sword. The pirate screamed in pain and released the boat, sliding back into the water.
Now you!
Shouted Stash, starting to bring the sword down on the next man, this time blade first. The second pirate leapt backward, followed quickly by the other three. Ignoring the men he'd just sentenced to drown, Stash turned to the remaining pirates, who watched him fearfully.
Now, he said, we're going to turn this boat over and bail. You men, move to...
Captain, interrupted Smee.
What is it?
Bellowed Stash, very close to running Smee through with his sword just to shut him up.
The men you knocked off, said Smee.
What about them? Said Stash.
They ain't sinking, Captain, said Smee.
Stash whirled around and saw it was true. Behind him, five heads and five sets of shoulders poked up from the surface of the lagoon, steady as rocks. The discarded crewmen were standing, chest deep, a sandbar extended off the point of land. The pirates could walk to the shore. Chapter 70. Almost There. Slank carefully watched the two auburn-haired mermaids swim back toward the rock where Peter stood. When they were nearly there, he addressed Little Richard.
"Turn the dory over and put the trunk in it," he said. "What about them?"
asked Little Richard, gesturing toward Alf and the boys, who were face down on the sand.
"There won't be no trouble," said Slank, "unless they want the little lady here to get her neck shortened."
He kept a firm grip on Molly as Little Richard waded out to the dory. The big man turned it over easily, and Slank was gratified to see that, other than the half-moon-shaped piece bitten from the transom by the mermaid, the little boat appeared undamaged. It would certainly get them to the ship. If necessary, he could try using the star stuff, but that could prove dicey, trying to fly the boat, and the trunk, and Little Richard, and the girl. Especially the girl. She concerned him most of all. A star catcher by blood, she might be real trouble once near the star stuff. Secretly, Slank had no intention, none at all, of letting Molly go. The boy was a fool to believe otherwise. Instead, Slank could see himself returning to Rundoon as a hero. He would be bringing with him not only the largest harvest of star stuff in human memory, but also a member of a legendary star catcher family, the daughter of the great Leonard Astor. King Zarbuff would be very pleased. The king loved pretty girls. He was sure to reward Slank heavily. Little Richard loaded the trunk into the stern of the upright dory.
All set, sir, he said.
Slank dragged Molly through the water and lifted her into the bow of the dory. He crouched next to her, knife still poised. Little Richard pushed off, then climbed into the middle seat and took up the oars. Slank kept his attention fixed on the rock where Peter stood, surrounded by the mermaids. None of them appeared to have moved.
"Remember our bargain, boy?" he shouted.
"I remember," replied Peter.
"Fool," thought Slank.
The oars dipped, pulled, rose, dipped, pulled, rose. Little Richard's powerful strokes, aided by the seaward current, pulled them rapidly away from the beach, toward the wide mouth of the lagoon. Slank kept his eyes on the rock, but still saw no sign of movement. As it finally slipped from sight in the distance, Peter and the mermaids were still positioned exactly as they had been. Slank switched his attention to the water, watching for the dreaded V's. He saw nothing, heard nothing, except for the swirling eddies caused by Little Richard's steady strokes. In 10 minutes' time, they reached the mouth of the lagoon and began to round the rocky point. Slank now fixed his attention on the masts of the Jolly Roger and considered what he would do with the ship's crew. They'd likely be unhappy having been tied up all these hours. Some he would have to throw overboard. Some he would keep to sail the ship, using Little Richard and the power the star stuff would give him to control them. Out of the lagoon and into the open sea, Slank checked the water's surface again. Still no sign of mermaids. He began for the first time in many hours to relax. He relaxed his grip on Molly's mouth. She spat as if disgusted by the taste of his hand.
"There now, young lady," he said. "I'm not so bad once you get used to me, which you will, on our voyage to Rundoon."
Molly glared at him, but said nothing.
"He's a fool, your trusting little friend back there.
taunted Slank. "He's a good person," said Molly. "He did what he thought was right. You wouldn't understand that."
As they approached the Jolly Roger, which sparkled in the moonlight, Slank could see the inert forms of the hog-tied pirates slumped over the booms, just as he and Little Richard had left them.
"Almost there," he said to Molly. "Welcome to your new home."
Chapter 71 A Good Thing. Black Stash slogged ashore, his sword drawn, his men in front of him, where he could see them, especially the ones he'd thrown off the boat. They'd been muttering and grumbling among themselves, and he sensed mutiny in the air. As they reached dry land, he decided that, given the unusual circumstances, it was time for a little motivational speech.
"Now, men," he said, "I know some of you might be unhappy with the way things has been going."
The men stared sullenly back at him. Stash continued,
"But if I hadn't shoved you off the boat back there, you'd be lost at sea now, wouldn't you? We'd all be lost. Think about it, men."
The men frowned, thinking about it. Stash pressed on.
"So, it's thanks to me you're standing here, isn't it? Without your captain, you'd all be dead. Am I right, men? Well, am I?"
Some of the men were scratching their heads. A good sign.
"Of course I'm right," said Stash. "That's why I'm the captain, and that's why you men do what I say. And right now, I says we march back around to that beach and kill them buggers what took our treasure and gets it and ourselves back to the Jolly Roger. Well, then, let's go, men."
And with that, he passed through the group of them and strode off in the general direction of the waterfalls. From there, they could continue on around to the beach. After a few strides, he glanced back. His men, led by Smee, were following. They didn't look none too happy, but they were coming. Stash looked forward and smiled.
"Pirates," he thought. "It's a good thing they're idiots."
Chapter 72 Change of Plans. Slank could not stop talking. He was almost giddy now as the dory drew near the Jolly Roger. He felt confident that with the power in the trunk, the crew would be his. It pleased him to have Molly to boast to taunt.
"Do you fancy snakes?" he asked her. "Because King Zarboff has a big one. Don't get too close to it, though. It fancies tender young morsels like you."
Slank laughed. "You'll never get to Rundoon," said Molly, her voice even. Slank cut his laugh short.
"Who's to stop me?" he said. "You? Your little trusting friend back there on the rock?"
"No," said Molly. "My father. He's coming, and he'll find you."
Slank laughed again.
"And what if he does?" he said. "Even if he manages to find me, do you think he's any match for what's in that trunk?"
Molly tried to remain expressionless, but Slank caught a flicker in her eyes.
"Ha!" he said. "I see that you see my point."
"Yes," said Molly,
although that was not what she had seen, not at all. What she had seen and almost betrayed was the dark shape coming across the water from the direction of the lagoon mouth, low and fast. She saw it because she was facing the stern. Slank, facing her, did not see it.
"Yes," she said, "I suppose you might be right. There must be a great deal of power in that trunk."
"Oh, indeed there is," said Slank,
enjoying the fact that his prize captive was talking now.
"More power than has ever fallen to earth, at least in human times. That's what they say. Power enough to change the world."
"What will you do with it?" asked Molly,
desperate to keep Slank's attention, to keep him from turning his head toward the shape in the sky. She worried, too, about Little Richard, who was facing the stern, but his head was bent forward, his attention focused, for now, on his oar work.
"What will we do?" said Slank. "Why, we'll change the world, of course. We'll command the world, we will, once we kill off you star-catchers."
The flying shape was close now.
"Do you really think you can do that?" said Molly.
"The star-catchers have a great deal of knowledge, you know, and power."
"True," said Slank, "but we're about to—"
He stopped abruptly, staring at Molly,
And in that instant she knew that her eyes tracking the flying shape had betrayed her. Slank whirled and shouted as he saw it hurtling toward him. Little Richard saw it too, and raised an oar to hit it as Slank raised his knife to stab it.
"Peter!" shouted Molly. "Molly, jump!" shouted Peter.
And jump she did, launching herself off the bow of the dory just as Peter swept overhead, his right hand stretched down and reaching for her. She too reached up for him, but his hand only brushed hers for an instant, and he was gone. Molly fell into the water. Slank roared in fury and reached overboard for Molly, grabbing her by the hair, but then he heard Peter's shout. The boy, having turned, was coming back around, diving toward him. Releasing Molly, Slank spun and raised his knife, timing his lunge as the boy swooped in closer, closer, and missed. Peter swerved at the last instant, leaving Slank stabbing the air and Little Richard swinging his oar at nothing. Slank looked back at the water and saw that Molly was gone. He cursed, then checked the stern. The trunk was still there.
"Out of my way!" he shouted, struggling in the little dory to get past Little Richard without capsizing.
With the girl gone, he would take no more chances. He would use the star stuff now. Chapter 73. Just Watch. Molly sank farther and farther down. The moon, at first bright and yellow on the rippling sea surface above her, grew dimmer and greener. She churned her arms and legs, but made heavy by her clothes, could not swim. Her lungs burned. She was going to drown. Her right hand tingled with warmth. Her hand was tingling where Peter had touched her. Molly held her hand before her face, and, in the watery dimness, she saw the faint glow, and she understood. Peter hadn't been trying to lift her off the boat. He'd been trying to put star stuff on her hand. But was it enough? They'd touch for only the briefest instant. Forcing herself to ignore her aching lungs, Molly raised her right hand over her head and closed her eyes, focusing on the tingling feeling, willing it to spread and to lift her.
"Please be enough. Please."
She opened her eyes, but couldn't tell if she'd sunk deeper or not. She was close to losing consciousness. Once more, she closed her eyes.
"Please. Please."
And then she felt it, the familiar warmth. She opened her eyes underwater and looked up to see the moon, the lovely moon, brighter and less green, much more golden, coming nearer to her now, and nearer. And then...
"Ah!"
Molly's head broke through the surface, and she leaned back and sucked in all the salt air she could grab with one breath, and...
"There she is! Get her!"
It was Slank's voice coming from behind her. Molly twisted. The star stuff had lifted her halfway out of the sea, so the water was now at her waist, and she saw the dory not 20 feet away, saw Slank hunkered over the trunk, pointing to her, saw the huge man tugging on the oars, turning the dory toward her.
"I need to get higher,"
thought Molly, straining upward.
"Come on! Come on!"
She felt her body rising, but slowly, slowly, too slowly, she saw as the dory was almost upon her, the giant swinging the stern around so that Slank, in the stern, could reach for her, and...
"Molly, here!"
Peter didn't just touch her right hand this time, he grabbed it. Joining hands, he pulled her upward, and she burst free of the water, just as...
"Got her!"
shouted Slank, taking hold of Molly's ankle. He yanked down hard, and Molly screamed in pain as her arm felt as though it was coming out of its socket. Peter hung on desperately to her right hand as the far more powerful Slank slowly dragged her down by her left leg, Molly hanging between them, suspended over the water at the stern of the dory.
"Grab her or the leg!"
Slank yelled to Little Richard, and the big man let go the oars. Molly knew that once the giant took hold of her, she was doomed. She realized she had one chance, just one, as she drew back her left foot and...
"Ooh!"
Slank grunted in pain as Molly drove her left heel into his nose, blood spurting instantly. The shock weakening his grip just enough for Molly to yank her right foot free of his grasp, just as Little Richard reached for her, his huge grasping fingers just brushing her leg, and...
she was free.
Released from Slank's weight, Peter and Molly shot upward together, still holding hands, tumbling, tumbling in the moonlit night sky. They let go of each other, spreading their arms, steadying themselves, both of them veteran flyers now. In a strangely calm moment, they hovered, catching their breath, about 50 feet above the water and the dory where Slank cursed, holding his bleeding nose.
"Are you all right?" said Peter.
"I'm fine," answered Molly, although in fact her whole body hurt from being a human tug-of-war rope. Then, stiffly, she added, "Thank you for saving me." "I owed you one," said Peter, studying her face, surprised by her tone. "What's wrong?"
"Wrong? Everything is wrong," hissed Molly.
"Peter, you let Slank have the trunk. I appreciate your heroics, but all we've done, all we've gone through, counts for nothing if that man," she pointed down at the dory,
"has the star stuff. I thought you understood that."
"Molly," said Peter, "I..."
"You're both going to die!"
Peter and Molly looked down. Slank, blood streaming down his face, was in the bow of the dory again, glaring up at them, knife in hand. His voice was choked with rage.
"Enjoy your last moments, lovebirds," he screamed. "I'm coming for you now."
Slank bent to the trunk lid. He'd already bashed one of the hinges off with a rock. Now he slid his knife blade under the other hinge, preparing to pry it off.
"Peter," said Molly, "we must stop him."
She began to lean forward into a dive, only to be stopped by Peter's hand grabbing her arm. They floated above the sea and the dory.
"Let go," she shouted.
"No," said Peter.
"Just watch."
Slank pulled on the knife handle. The trunk hinge popped off easily, as if it had been barely attached, and clattered to the bottom of the dory. Slank looked back up at Peter and Molly, a look of triumph on his face, then turned back to the trunk and lifted the lid. The trunk was empty. For 2 seconds, 3, 4, Slank remained absolutely motionless. A drop of blood fell from his nose and spattered on the rough wooden bottom of the trunk. Then, with a scream of inhuman rage, he stood, looked up, drew back his arm, and hurled his knife skyward, straight at Peter. It was a perfectly aimed throw, and Slank knew, as he released it, that it would find its mark. And it would have, except for the star stuff's power flowing through Peter, enhancing his senses, slowing the world down for him. He saw the blade leave Slank's hand, saw it turning in the moonlight, the turns perfectly timed so that the knife's sharp point would penetrate deep into the center of his chest. And Peter saw that if he shifted his body just slightly and brought his hand up just now, as Slank gaped in disbelief, Peter plucked his knife right out of the air.
"Thank you,"
shouted Peter. Slank, a strangling sound coming from his throat, looked around furiously for something, anything, to use as a weapon. But there was nothing in the dory, nothing but the empty trunk, mocking him.
"Mr. Slank," said Little Richard, "we're moving. I mean, something's moving us."
Slank looked at the water. It was true. Although Little Richard wasn't touching the oars, the dory, as if acting on its own, was moving away from the island. Slank looked at the water astern. And there he saw them, the telltale V's of the mermaids. The dory was picking up speed. The island was receding.
"Goodbye," called Peter, waving. "Bon voyage, Mr. Slank,"
called Molly. Slank, too stunned to answer, slumped to the bottom of the dory, his back against the empty trunk. He stared back at the boy and the girl who had somehow defeated him.
"A boy and a girl."
They waved at him one last time, then, holding hands, they turned, leaned forward, and swooped down, then up in a graceful inverted arc, heading back to the island, as Slank and Little Richard continued being pushed helplessly out to the open sea, in a little boat with an old trunk that had once held the greatest treasure on earth. Chapter 74 The Golden Box. Molly flew close to Peter so he could hear her over the sound of the air rushing past as they swooped and soared over the sea, heading back to the island.
"What did you do with the star stuff?" she shouted. "How did you do it? Where is it now? Who..."
"Wait," laughed Peter.
"One question at a time. Is the star stuff safe?" she asked. "Yes," he said. "I'm taking you to it now." "Oh, Peter, thank heaven," she said. "But what happened? Where were you? After you left us to climb over the point, we came round the long way to the beach and you weren't there." "Right," said Peter. "I waited for a while, but there was some kind of fight going on up the beach, so I went to have a look." "You were supposed to wait for us," said Molly. "I know," said Peter. "I didn't intend to get close, but then I saw..."
Peter hesitated.
"You saw what?" said Molly impatiently.
I saw a mermaid, said Peter. He looked sideways at Molly, who was staring at him. You don't believe me? He said. No, she said slowly, I do. Do you remember when I told you about the strange things that star stuff does to animals, the minotaurs and such? Yes, said Peter. Well, that's where mermaids come from, said Molly. The trunk must have leaked star stuff into the water. Maybe it did, said Peter. Well, anyway, I found this mermaid on the beach and she was hurt, bleeding from the head, and I had your locket and there was a little star stuff left, so I gave it to her. I'm sorry, Molly, but I was afraid she would die, and she was so beautiful. Molly gave Peter a very sharp look, but he missed it. Go on, she said coolly. After that, Peter said, things happened so fast. The star stuff healed the mermaid, and there were these other mermaids, and they were all excited about something, and I followed them along the beach, and there was the trunk, with nobody around it. So I ran up to it, and what? I'm not sure, said Peter. I think somebody hit me because I had a raging head pain when I woke up in the water and Teacher was holding me. Teacher? Said Molly. The mermaid I saved, said Peter. Molly, she saved me. How do you know her name is Teacher? Said Molly. I don't know, said Peter. I just know. I can feel her thoughts and she can feel mine. Isn't that incredible, Molly? Yes, said Molly, sounding quite unhappy, although Peter didn't notice. They were at the mouth of the lagoon now. Peter, with Molly following close, altered course slightly, leaning slightly to the right, toward the jumble of rocks at the base of the waterfall in the center of the curving beach. So anyway, continued Peter, I was in the water with Teacher and the others keeping me afloat, and Teacher told me, not by speaking, you understand, but by thinking, you told me that. Said Molly. Right, by thinking. She told me that she knew about the trunk. She called it Creator. And we decided to find it, so we went back to the beach, and we saw the fight going on with you and James jumping on Slank and Alf fighting that huge man, and we saw the trunk was unguarded, and that's when we came up with our plan. You and Teacher, said Molly. Yes, said Peter. She's very clever. You'll like her. I'm sure, said Molly. While you were fighting, said Peter, we grabbed the trunk and carried it quickly. You won't believe how fast the mermaids can swim, out to the rocks. My biggest fear was that we wouldn't be able to open it, but somebody had already bashed at the hinges, and it was easy. And there it was, inside Molly. It was amazing. And I took it out and hid it behind the rock. You touched the star stuff, said Molly. Peter, in that quantity, it could have killed you. I didn't touch it directly, said Peter. It was in a locked metal box, a yellow box like gold. It's very powerful, Molly, much more so than the locket. I only held it in my hands for a moment when I lifted it, and I nearly fainted from that. Anyway, I think the box must have leaked because there was loose star stuff in the wooden trunk. That's why the trunk glowed so much. I dumped the loose star stuff onto the rock, next to where I hid the metal box. Then I put the wooden trunk on the rock and yelled to Slank. A good thing, too, said Molly. He was about to stab me. I know, said Peter. I was scared to death he'd figure out the trick, but he believed me and took the trunk. Of course he took you, too. I hadn't expected that. I bet Teacher did, muttered Molly. What? Said Peter. Nothing, said Molly. But I had the loose star stuff, said Peter. So I waited a bit, figuring Slank would let his guard down. Then I came after you with the mermaids following to make sure Slank didn't come back. Thank you again, said Molly. It's nothing, said Peter. Ah, there's the rock. Just ahead was the flat rock from which Peter had stood with the wooden trunk. From this, the seaward side, Molly could see that the rock had a ledge just above the water. On that ledge rested a gleaming gold box, radiant in the moonlight. Almost too bright to look at directly. Next to it was a small glowing pile, the remains of the leaked star stuff. As she swooped close, Molly saw mermaids in the water and several more sitting on the rock. Peter swooped in and landed lightly among them. He had become quite an accomplished flyer. Molly alit next to him. The mermaids studied her with frank curiosity. Molly, said Peter, this is Teacher. She was, as Peter had said, beautiful, her long blonde tresses flowing elegantly down her front, Molly felt hideously dowdy in contrast. Her dress was wet, her hair a tangled mess.
"I'm sure you two will be great friends," said Peter.
Molly and Teacher eyed each other in the manner of two young women who will never, ever be great friends.
"I must take care of the star stuff," said Molly. "We're rid of Stank, I hope, but there are still those pirates about."
She bent down to examine the gold chest, only to draw back quickly when two mermaids lunged toward her, hissing.
"They're guarding it," said Peter. "Well, tell them to stop," said Molly.
Peter turned to Teacher, and they exchanged a look that nearly drove Molly insane with jealousy, though she hid her feelings well. Then Teacher, looking none too happy, grunted something, and the two hissing mermaids retreated.
"You can touch it now," said Peter.
"Thank you," said Molly coldly. She bent to examine the chest, putting her hand on it, then quickly pulling it away, overwhelmed by the power she felt emanating from it. Peter was right. It was much stronger than her locket had been. Molly was worried. She finally had the star stuff, but what could she do with it? How could she get it off this rock? And if she could, where would she move it? Would it be safer on the island, with the pirates and the savages? Molly felt tired and cold, and no match for the crushing burden of responsibility for solving a problem far beyond her limited star-catcher training. She wanted to cry, but she did not want Peter to see her cry, and she especially did not want Teacher, with her flowing hair, to see her cry. And so she stood and turned toward the sea, and felt the burn of tears, and, not wanting to be seen wiping her eyes, blinked them, first in irritation, and then again in amazement, as she saw it, coming round the point on the right side of the lagoon, a longboat, four oars per side, moving swiftly, guided by the familiar, graceful, arcing form of Arm.
"Ahoy!"
called a deep voice from the longboat, and Molly didn't care now who saw her cry, because she knew that voice better than any other in the world. The voice of her father.
Chapter 75. Forever. They were on the beach now. Peter, Molly, Leonard Astor, Alf, James, Prentice, Thomas, and Tubby Ted. After his tearful reunion with Molly, Leonard had insisted that she and Peter get off the rock, and that the mermaids keep their distance while his crew of starcatchers dealt with the box of star stuff. From the beach, the scene on the rock looked unearthly. The starcatchers, five men and three women, were clad head to toe in shiny gold-coloured clothing, including gloves, boots and helmets, whose face masks had only the smallest of eye slits. They shone like human chandeliers, their gleaming costumes reflecting both the moon, now low in the sky but still bright, and the brilliant light radiating from the golden star-stuff box. As Peter and the others on the beach watched, Leonard explained that the shining clothes were, in fact, made of gold. It had been spun into fibers and woven by a process known only to the starcatchers, who had learned over the years that gold, and only gold, could contain the power of the star stuff.
"That's why the others put this batch of star stuff into the golden box," said Leonard. "But they didn't do it correctly. The box must be constructed so that air itself cannot pass in or out. If it's done right, the star stuff can't escape, and it can't be detected. That's why I found nothing odd about the fact that I felt nothing from the chunk on the Wasp. I assumed the golden box inside was made correctly. But, of course, the real reason was that there was no star stuff inside the Wasp trunk. It was a ruse that, I'm ashamed to say, fooled me completely. The real star stuff box, the one on the Neverland, was not made properly. The others don't have the experience that we have, or the expertise, or the craftsmanship. And so the box leaked. In fact, it's been leaking since it was back in Scotland. Apparently some of it got on a lizard or snake, which transformed into some sort of strange, gigantic creature, which managed to escape into Loch Ness. I certainly hope that's the last we hear of that. In any event," continued Leonard, "we've got the star stuff back now, thanks to you, young lady. You did well, Molly. Extraordinarily well. A young starcatcher alone defeating Slank and that giant of his."
"It wasn't just me," said Molly. "It was Peter, too. In fact, it was mostly Peter."
"Is that so?" Leonard said thoughtfully, studying Peter.
"It is, Father,"
said Molly. Peter was wonderful. There's so much I need to tell you. But for starters, he rescued me from Slank, and he came up with the idea of taking the star stuff out of the trunk.
That wasn't just me, said Peter, blushing. That was Teacher's idea, too.
I suppose, said Molly, coldly.
Teacher, said Leonard.
That mermaid, there, said Peter, the yellow-haired one. He pointed to where the mermaids were gathered, a few yards offshore. Teacher was the closest, watching them, watching Molly, actually, and looking quite unhappy.
So you picked up the golden box? Leonard asked Peter.
I did, said Peter.
And how long did you hold it?
I don't know, said Peter. A few seconds, I think. I can't say for sure. As I told Molly, I almost fainted.
You almost did far worse than that, said Leonard, but softly to himself.
What did you say? Said Molly.
Nothing, said Leonard. Molly, did you touch the box?
Only for the briefest instant, said Molly. I had to pull my hand away. I don't know how Peter managed to pick it up.
Nor do I, said Leonard, studying Peter now with an intensity that Peter found disconcerting. Nor do I. Tell me, Peter, he said, how did you fly out to rescue Molly from Slank?
I used the loose star stuff, said Peter. I poured it out of the trunk and scooped some into my hand.
I see, said Leonard. And you gave some to Molly so she could fly back with you, is that right?
Yes, said Peter.
Molly, said Leonard, can you fly now?
Molly closed her eyes, concentrating. No, she said after a few moments. It's worn off.
Peter, said Leonard, can you fly?
Peter's body immediately started to rise. That's odd, he said, hovering a few feet off the ground. Usually I have to try, but this time I just thought about it, and here I am.
He floated gently back down.
I see, said Leonard, his expression grave. Father, said Molly, what is it? Is something wrong with Peter?
Not wrong, no, said Leonard. Not exactly.
What do you mean? Said Molly and Peter together.
I mean, said Aster, that the star stuff may have changed Peter, just as it changed the fish in this lagoon.
He gestured toward the mermaids.
It can change people, too, if there's enough of it.
Peter was pale. How did it change me? I don't feel any different.
Fly, said Leonard. Immediately Peter rose again.
That's how, said Leonard. You mean I can just fly now without needing more star stuff?
Yes, said Leonard.
And it's permanent, said Peter. I'll always be able to fly.
I believe so, said Leonard.
But that's wonderful, said Peter, grinning hugely, still floating just off the ground. I can fly. But Father, said Molly, if that's so, why don't all the star catchers do what Peter did? Why don't we expose ourselves to enough star stuff that we can always fly as well?
For two reasons, said Leonard. One is that the concentration of star stuff required for the transformation is ordinarily fatal, even for a star catcher, let alone a normal person. Peter is very, very lucky. He must have an extraordinary tolerance for star stuff. Most people who picked up that leaking box would have died. In fact, we understand that several did die when that box was filled.
What's the other reason? Said Peter.
The other reason, said Leonard, is that the star stuff in that concentration causes other changes in humans, beyond just enabling them to fly.
What do you mean? Said Peter. What other changes?
I don't know, frankly, said Leonard. There are a few cases like yours, of a person surviving the exposure, and each one is unique. But it's possible that you...
Leonard hesitated. That I what? Pressed Peter.
That you won't get any older.
What? Said Peter.
That you'll stay as you are, said Leonard. A boy. Forever.
Peter thought about that for several moments, then spoke slowly. Is that bad? he said.
"I don't know," said Leonard. "I suppose in some ways it could be, never getting old and tired, never becoming frail."
Peter considered that.
"But it could be lonely, too," he said, "staying the same age while your friends grow up."
He looked at